This is the Morning Magazine for June 13th of 2022. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, marches and rallies against gun violence took place across the country Saturday. We'll hear from participants of the Denver March for Our Lives about how gun violence has affected them. Seniors from Boulder's Fraser Meadows Retirement Community organized their own march in solidarity with the students in Denver. We'll hear why. And CityCast Denver asks if diversity is just a buzzword in Denver's theater scene. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then its Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longo-Better. Then at 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. After that, Anne Cantillo will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Nicole Rubin.
Weather forecasters are warning of potentially dangerous heat today, with temperatures nearing 100 degrees in the Denver metro area. Critical fire weather conditions are also expected across the central Rockies. Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy announced yesterday that a bipartisan group of senators reached an agreement on terms for reforming the country's gun laws. Senator Murphy says at least 10 Republicans have agreed to support the measures, enough to break a filibuster. The breakthrough, after 30 years of inaction, comes after nationwide marches calling for common sense gun reforms. We'll have more on the local marches later in the show. Front Range cities, including Boulder and Louisville, are enacting local restrictions. The City Council of Boulder unanimously approved 6 new ordinances last week. Boulder Mayor Aaron Brockett urged more cities across the state to pass stricter gun laws to aid in preventing mass shootings. Brockett said laws that may have prevented the King Super shooting are more effective if more cities pass them. These ordinances could potentially brush up against the impending Supreme Court ruling in the case of New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Incorporated. This case questions the constitutionality of a law more than a century old in the state, which requires a person requesting a concealed carry permit to exhibit the need for self-defense. On June 16th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., Boulder County Community and Planning is hosting an information session regarding land use code update, which would allow an accessory dwelling to be a part of the redevelopment of a property that was destroyed by the Marshall Fire. The meeting will include a presentation and an overview of the proposed amendments for the redevelopment for 1 hour, a Q&A session for 15 minutes, and another 15 minutes for discussing the next steps for the plan. It will be recorded and uploaded online for those unable to attend on Friday, June 17th. There will be a public comment period from June 16th to June 26th intended for comments regarding the proposal. Last week, the Colorado State Board of Education met in Estes Park to discuss social studies standards and the statewide guidelines for curriculum in history and civics classes. The state asked Social Studies Standards Review Committee to add inclusive language to social studies curriculums that highlight the contributions of African American, Asian American, Indigenous, Latin, and LGBTQ+, and religious minority communities. While the State Board of Education has discussed adding new voices to school social and civic studies before, pushback from anti-LGBTQ+ protesters resulted in the board rolling back the change. This weekend's committee final recommendations, according to a press release, strike 27 references to the LGBTQ+ community and name the LGBT+ community in their contributions just 5 times throughout K-12 social studies standards, twice in 4th grade history, twice in 4th grade civics, and once in high school history. The final recommendations also backtrack to reference African American, Asian American, Indigenous, Latin, and religious minority communities and their contributions throughout the standards. The power is now shifted to the State Board of Education, which plans to meet monthly to discuss the standards and consider amendments to the final recommendations until November or December, when the board is expected to take a final vote. The next meeting is scheduled for July 13th and 14th. In Boulder, it is a high of 93 and a low of 64. In Fort Collins, it's a high of 96 and a low of 54. In Denver, it's a high of 97 and a low of 62. Outside of the studio here in Boulder, it's 67 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Nicole Rubin.
You are listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Ariana Proctor. Young people across the country organized marches and rallies to once again urge policymakers and voters to enact stronger gun safety laws. Hundreds of Colorado residents attended Denver's rally on Saturday at the Civic Center Park. Speakers ranged from young students who have been impacted by this epidemic, to parents who have suffered the loss of their children to gun violence, to policymakers themselves. At the march, KGNU's Alexis Kenyon and I spoke with several attendees to ask how gun violence has affected their lives.
Cassidy Thompson, I'm 15. It's encroaching on everyone. Like, I'm as affected by gun violence as everyone else who hasn't encountered a school shooting firsthand, but is so likely to. We do active shooter drills. We hide under tables. We hide where they can't find us. We hide, like, away from windows, away from doors, and we just sit there and wait, and we practice waiting for the day that a shooter will come into our school and try to shoot at us. And it's just scary because, like, practicing to be safe, but also just that looming possibility every single day is terrifying.
My name is Adam Busack. I'm 20 years old, and I grew up in Littleton, Colorado, which was rocked by Columbine just years before I was born. You know, everybody experiences it. Everybody thinks about it. I know I couldn't even count the amount of people that walk into every classroom they go into, and the first thing they're looking for is an exit, you know, how they can get out of there if the worst thing happens. I think our generation is so exposed to it that they understand, every single one of us, how much of an issue this is. And that gives me hope that because we all understand how much of an issue this is, we're going to push for it to be changed in the future.
I am Reed Brzezinski, and I am 16. I'm scared. It's hard to admit, but every time I go out in public, even places that I've been thousands of times, I am constantly aware where the exits are, where people are, where threats could be, what would I do if? And it's terrifying. No one should have to live in fear. I don't need to tell you how stress can ruin one's mental health and from there ruin one's life, but it does. And it's a stress that no one should have to deal with, especially not little children.
My name is Amanda Wilcox, and I'm here because I care deeply about reducing gun violence and preventing the loss of life, being it fourth graders in elementary school, African American seniors at a grocery store, people all ages in between. I'm here because I lost my daughter to gun violence, and it's time to end the shootings and the killings. I remember in 1999, I was with my three kids skiing when there's a news flash about the shooting in Columbine. Two of my kids were in high school. I was horrified and I was sickened, and I couldn't wait for school to be over that year. Little did I know then that 2 years later, my daughter, Laura, bright and beautiful at age 19, would be killed in a rampage shooting. No one is safe from gun violence, and as we heard today, the numbers are getting worse. Each shooting's terrible because it's not theoretical to me. I know what it's like for a family to wait, waiting for news, not hearing from their loved one, hoping that they're okay, telling themselves that they're okay because it's too difficult to think of the alternative, waiting so long to find out, looking at your dead child's body, seeing the effect of it on my daughter's siblings, on her brothers, on our marriage. I mean, it turns everything upside down. So every time there's a new shooting, it brings that all back.
My name is Nick Wilcox. We've been to many, many demonstrations in the past, and this is the first one I can remember where we haven't been confronted with armed protesters, because I think they know that they are so in the wrong. I think they're too embarrassed to be here. How can you reasonably argue against what's being asked for here? I mean, it makes no sense.
Kristen Gustafson, my daughter Rachel Volick is one of the organizers. If you've never been in a school for an active shooter drill, you really can't say anything, because I was in there when Rachel was in kindergarten and they put us in the closets. The police were running down the hallway. I didn't know if it was a real drill or not. Kindergartners were peeing themselves, crying, all of it was. It was honestly so traumatic, and to think that that's what we're putting our kids through on a regular basis, that we have normalized that, is insane. I'll be honest, like, I'm a Second Amendment supporter. My parents are retired military. They're members of the NRA. But if you can't say that something needs to change and that we need to invoke laws and change, then it's a separate issue. It's ridiculous. We have to come together to end this. I don't believe in assault weapons being sold. I don't believe in selling to people at shows without doing background checks. We should have laws. You should be older. We should have I think my everyday life is affected by gun violence, truthfully.
Rhiannon Danborn, I'm 16 years old. As a student, it has been traumatizing to read headlines every month about a new school shooting, about a new mass shooting, to know that we're not safe in our grocery stores, in our movie theaters, in where places where we worship, anywhere in public, we're not safe. To go to school every day and have the thought just in the back of your mind, this could be the day, it's traumatizing. It has impacted me. I've become numb to hearing about my peers who have died, about hearing about having friends who have, their entire lives have been changed because of gun violence. And just as a student, it's been traumatizing. I am begging the people who can vote and our representatives to listen to us. And I'm just here for all of the people that can't be here, who did not make it to this day. And I'm hoping that something changes.
While the Denver rally trended young, participants of a solidarity march in Boulder were overwhelming retirees. KGNU's Shannon Young dropped by the march in the park across from the Fraser Meadows Retirement Home.
Dozens of people walked around Boulder's Thunderbird Lake Saturday morning. Some carried signs, others used walking devices.
The vast majority of the people participating in this march are seniors. Why is that?
We all live in a retirement center, and we have some strong political views there, so that's what got this organized.
92-year-old Viv Postmus was at the front of the march. The retired school teacher says it shouldn't be surprising that many of the seniors at the Fraser Meadows retirement community are politically active.
Well, we've had a lot of experience and cumulative wisdom, and we should contribute that as long as we can.
One way Fraser residents stay active is to write letters to help out with voter registrations. Reva Greenberg, a former history professor, says retirement has given her and others more time to think about and act on issues.
I feel very, very, very strongly about the lives of children and other human beings. And I just don't understand why a majority of Americans want to do something about the gun problems, and yet our Congress, or some people in our Congress, refuse to do it.
Saturday's march wasn't the first time retirees at Fraser have turned out to protest gun violence against students. 83-year-old Pete Dawson says he can remember his fellow residents joining students at a nearby middle school during a walkout after the 2018 mass murder at a high school in Parkland, Florida.
The kids were all stepping out of school for 17 minutes that day, and we went out and walked around the pond here at about the same time, and we came back and we found that at Horizon Middle School, right next to here, the kids were all walking around and holding hands, and they invited us to join them and hold hands and be with them during their 17 minutes. And the principal had misty eyes, and we all had misty eyes. It was so moving that we were all together with the kids on this moment.
Dawson joined Saturday's demonstration despite having had surgery the day before. Others at the march had more evident medical or mobility issues.
We talk too much about apathy, you know, sitting back, and we can't do that this time. We just cannot do that.
Fraser resident and march organizer Mitch Stahl says holding the rally in the park across the street from the retirement home was key to senior participation.
The walk around the pond has been carefully maintained so that we can bring our electric carts, our electric wheelchairs, our walkers, whatever, and feel comfortable making the trip, walking around. So it gets us out because it's a desirable place.
Stahl says she's been a lifelong activist and even crossed over into working within institutional politics as a congressional aide. While she still has plenty of energy, she had this advice for young people entering advocacy work.
Obviously, they have to pick up the banner and carry it. I know that having started myself their age, that there have been cyclical kinds of things where we think, oh my golly, nobody is going to do it if we give up. We have McCarthy come along, and you know, one after the other. And we thought nuclear weapons would never get under an issue, and we didn't think abortion rights would be an issue, which is, of course, coming up again. And so I know that there's hope.
Stahl says she can understand why young people may feel angry about having to clean up messes not of their making, but that the anger must translate to action to arrive at a solution.
That was Shannon Young speaking to residents of the Fraser Meadows retirement community. Before that were the voices of participants of the Denver March for Our Lives. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Ariana Proctor. We'll be back after this quick break. For 13 years, the Black Actors Guild created and performed some of the most provocative and entertaining plays in Denver. They started out as students at Denver School of the Arts and went on to bring in as much as $700,000 per year through their plays and arts education courses. But after a rough couple of years, they're closing the curtain. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sat down with her friend and Black Actors Guild co-founder Ryan Fu to talk about the state of theater in Denver and answer some big questions.
So I want to talk about this quote-unquote traditional theater idea. Honestly, I picture a pretty white, mostly older audience. And when I think back to Black Actors Guild productions I saw early on especially, that was not the case at all. That was not who was in the audience with me. I think about Show Yatif. I think about events that you put on. There were young people of color, not only on your stage, but showing up for your events.
Yeah.
What do you think traditional theater could learn from the Black Actors Guild's approach?
So just first off, statistically, I think it was 75% of our audience was under age 30, which is, and mostly people of color, which is honestly kind of insane. If any national theater in the world could claim those credentials, there would be investors from every angle pouring in money, because the average age of theater goers at places like the DCPA, and I don't mean to speak for them, but I believe it's above 65, which for a very tactile business sense means your audience is dead in 15 years. Like not hyperbole, right? They call it attrition. There's going to be a legitimate attrition rate. Where your audience is no longer, they're too old to come out to the theater. But they're also the main patrons, they're the main philanthropists, and they tend to be older white people with money.
You know, a lot of Denver theater companies are announcing their lineups for this upcoming season, and they're also saying that they're prioritizing diversity. Is this lip service, or is this a moment of reckoning leading to some positive changes? Like, do you think that we are actually...
Oh, you'll get me in trouble, Brie.
I had you on this show.
I like to poke bears. It's okay. If I'm being really honest, it's like 80-20 split fake to real. I would say there's probably like 20% of theaters who are genuinely invested in. And I would just offer it to theater companies out there. If you want to do Shakespeare and you want to be white people doing Shakespeare, that's fine. Like, live in that space and take a breath, and that's okay. If you want to hold space for people of color and you want to include them in your Shakespeare, that is also okay. But do not confuse putting black people in Shakespeare with telling black stories. I'm not saying there aren't like black people who love opera and like traditional Shakespeare and like that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if you want to tell stories that are diverse, that it's more than just including a diverse cast. If you're listening to this and you run a nonprofit right now that does theater, listen to me. Take a breath. And don't just include people because you think it's the right thing to do. go talk to people in the community who are people of color that you trust, love, and believe in, and ask them what they need. And then then build from a place of what that community is asking for, rather than assuming what it wants and trying to include them in your world. Please don't do that. It's genuinely disrespectful. Don't just include us. Like, give us space.
I want to mention two recent shows at the DCPA, Choir Boy and Quixote Nuevo, because one is this coming-of-age story about a Black gay man, and the other is a Tejano retelling of the classic Don Quixote. I'm wondering where you think that those shows fit in with this conversation about diversity.
There's a certain kind of safety that comes with telling a story you know is popular enough that you will sell tickets to. And it will tell, metaphorically, the stories that need to be told for certain communities. If Choir Boy were produced by and written by a local theater company, and then it got picked up somewhere in Chicago, it would be a great example of what I'm trying to talk about. But it's the opposite. I've seen the show. I did think it was produced well, but it wouldn't quite cross the threshold of telling community story for me. Although I think maybe for LGBTQA plus communities, there's some yes there.
And I know with Quixote Nuevo, which I haven't seen, but our producer Lizzie Goldsmith has, and she talked about it being this like fun and thought-provoking reimagining of the story. But the thing that she really noticed was that there weren't a ton of people of color in the actual audience.
It's also maybe a bit revealing about who's that story really for. You know, is it really written, produced, directed, put up for audiences of color, for communities for whom they are speaking on behalf of? Or is it put up for, or is it put up for people to watch that experience and go, oh my, like what? How interesting it must be to be in that community. Obviously, everything the DCPA does is fantastic. They're incredibly high fidelity production, and I never want that fidelity to drop. I think that we can do local stuff at that tier of
I was going to say too, Ryan, I think your criticisms of the DCPA are warranted, and I don't think they get enough criticism in a certain way because it's one of those things where it's like, it's our thing that we have, don't mess with it. It's like, instead of being like, well, this is how we could do it better with obviously with the budget that exists and the facilities that exist, like So I want to kind of pull back to a bigger picture of Denver for a minute. When you started the Guild more than a decade ago, I think that we could agree that Denver was a little bit of a different place. It was a little bit cheaper and easier for us to try new things. And like, I just feel like there was literal spaces for us to experiment that were more affordable.
Yeah.
And I think some of that experimentation and room for trying new things is gone because the city is more expensive, but also we're attracting bigger shows, right? I mean, like we've had Hamilton twice or like... I just got a press release for an Angry Birds interactive experience. Do you think that we have become victims of our own success as a city?
I think that I'm weary of labeling it as success, to be honest. So there's a cool idea that there's this model that like a large institution theater can run successfully, make profit, and that profit can become tax revenue for the city to do other important things like run schools or whatever. Like that idea is really nice, but stick with me here. What if instead of making Hamilton $7 million, we made a local producer that money, right? And so still you have the same concept. Still you've got tax generation happening. But instead of people in LA and New York buying an extra yacht, which I don't know if that's what the Hamilton people do. I'm sure that's what the Angry Birds people are doing. Instead of that, imagine if one local producer, two local producers, a team of 10 local producers created something that was super... And not only did they get this giant stage to do this big thing, not only are they probably going to be hiring all local actors, circulating all of that money in the local economy, but now as the DCPA, you've given that local producer their first step onto the national launch pad. Now they can take the concept of Denver being dope out to New York or LA and do the opposite of what they're doing to us. I think that I don't want to say we've become a victim of our own success because I don't think it's success yet. Success to me would be our city really investing in the talent that I swear to God is here. Why has it got to be that those stages are reserved only for paying people who don't live here millions of dollars?
Ryan Fu, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Bree. Thank you for having me.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ariana Proctor. Special thanks to Nicole Rubin, Kiara DeMare, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, and the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's Storytellers of Color with Rosanna Longo-Better. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.